Welcome to the Rogue Tailboard Podcast, where firemen are fired up and minimal is unacceptable. Good morning, guys. Here we are, the last day of 2023. It is December 31st, beautiful Sunday morning. Little nippy out where I'm at here in East Texas, but it's beautiful winter weather for what we normally have. Just got back from a great sermon from church. Started in Joshua chapter 3. It's more or less talking about remembering God and remembering that He will deliver you, and how when Moses died, he put the responsibility and chose Joshua to be the one to bring the Israelites home to the promised land. And there are three words that were very powerful throughout the teaching points of this morning's sermon. And that was prepare, remember, and trust. And when it was our student pastor that got up on there and he was preaching the sermons, really great young man, just entered fatherhood, very sound, outstanding testimony. And when he was just delivering those teaching points throughout his sermon, I really reflected on that quite a bit. You know, just look back on that. Prepare, remember, and trust. So there's all things that need preparation. And then when you prepare, you gotta remember how you prepared, remember why you're preparing, remember who you are, remember everything that's going into it, and then trust. Trust in your preparation, trust in Christ, trust in yourself. It was very powerful. There's more coming on that. That's not today's topic. Or really just kind of things to discuss. It was just awesome insight that I never heard put that way this morning, so I'm gonna meddle on that a little bit, squeeze that little lemon and see what kind of lemonade I can make out of those three words as I ask God to really guide me through that. But 2023, how was it for you guys? You know, look back. I'm not a New Year's resolution guy. I'm full in on the you should already be preparing for everyday life to begin with. So there's no real things. If you're an individual like me and you do a bunch of self-reflecting and self-evaluating on a frequent basis, you don't need to put off any kind of adjustments that you need to make to better yourself for a new year. In all honesty, I just think New Year's resolutions are just a big marketing scheme that everyone tries to capitalize on. But again, that's a topic for another day. But I thought it was a pretty well-rounded year. A lot of trials, tribulations, a lot of ups, a lot of downs, a lot of different things to strengthen me as a believer, strengthen me as a father, as a husband, as a fireman. And it was a year to remember. But again, God delivered me, and I'm beyond thankful for that. And we just got done. Me and a few other guys at my organization went to a search off the hose line class yesterday in Caddo Parish, Keithville, Louisiana. Those guys do incredible things out there. They got the blessing of their chief and department with an outstanding training grounds. And they frequently put on just classes. And they don't ask for anything but for you to come. And I think that's incredible. I think the fire service needs a lot more of that. And what I loved most about it was, I said, look, this is the training topic, the training point, but this is all peer-to-peer. We're not the know-all be-alls. We're students too, just trying to learn, but we're going to gather here today and we're going to work on searching off the hose line as the heel man and really put a lot of emphasis on the heel man aspect, which I thought was incredible. I do believe that there's not enough light on that position per se, or awareness. I think, you know, hopefully this is just my naiveness, but I hope I'm wrong. But it does appear that a lot of people just have the misconception that the heel man just brings hoes into the room as much as possible, and that's all he's good for. But there's right and wrong ways to do everything, and we went over all different kind of angles of how to make that a better position, and I thought it was very, very fruitful. I'm great in the fact that I'm thankful that I'm blessed. I should say blessed. I don't know why great came out and had a little brain fart. But I'm very grateful to have built those relationships with those and to see our organization and their organization come together. And I hope to see more of that in the future. And then when our department's current training grounds are completed, have them a place to come and see how we do things too. They're also a small company tactics area as well. They ride three deep. Most of our department rides three deep. I'm privileged enough to have a district where it requires four people minimum, and you can do a lot with that. We all know that. We don't take it for granted. We're definitely able to count or utilize more assets on the fire ground or any kind of emergency ground. So that was great. It was a great experience. Shout out to everyone that attended that. They all got great takeaways from that. And, you know, again, there were a post I put reflecting on it yesterday. You know, we only got 121 days on duty on average to respond to calls, to train. So what are you doing on those other days besides recovery? You know, are we, you know, just little side thoughts. Are we just too worried about a side job because we built up a lifestyle that we need a second job for? Or are we at least physically sane in shape, you know, so that a way we don't have to necessarily put a lot of focal point on that on our on-duty times, but, you know, we're just at the maintaining stage. Who knows? But again, in the grand scheme of things, 121 days to train, maintain skill sets. It's not a lot, guys. And yeah, I don't know. I wish there would be that point to where more of the fire service will comprehend that so they can better serve their community. It's just that simple, in my opinion. I don't understand why it's so complicated. Or the ones that go above and beyond the 121 days of on-duty time that, you know, oh, we're the diggits, we're ate up with the job. You know, all opinions aside, I'm just trying to drive home the fact that 121 days is not enough time to truly prepare for a job that tries to kill you every time you clock in. So with that little update kind of going on in the world over here, things are good. Still trying to wait to get my doctor's general surgeon consultation process out of the way with the holidays so I can get this daggum abdominal muscle tear patched up before it gets worse. That's been a fun challenge, trying to dial back workout routines to stay in shape, to train and be prepared for the job, and not cause any more damage, so to say. But again, that's life. Just gotta saddle up and ride it out. But today we are going back to the series of James. Chapter 3 is it's gonna be a gut check for me. It's probably gonna gut check a lot of y'all listening to. But this is over taming the tongue. And that's something I still struggle with. I do have, you know, not proud of it, but sometimes you don't catch it until it's after the fact. But, you know, you get loose lips sometimes in the firehouse. When I'm with the boys, I know that my vocabulary is not as consistent as it would be if I was at home with my family. And a little more cuss words or sentence-enhancing words come out more regularly when I'm on duty than off duty. And that's something I need to work on. Again, I'm not proud about it, not boasting about it. It's just being transparent with you guys. So this chapter in James called Taming the Tongue, it's probably going to step on my toes. But you know what? That's okay. I need it. It's how we get better, right? And with that, though, I want to think about just the... we're going to hear about it scripturally, too. But think about your words and what formulates your words. It's your thoughts. So you think things, And wiser men have learned to take that extra time to think about what they're going to say or how they're going to say it, and then they say it, versus emotionally just having a word vomit and then insert foot in mouth because maybe it might have been truthful, but the delivery was wrong, or I chose to go about it in an immature way, and instead of potentially presenting a good topic, debate, of discussion on different points of views, you just kind of, like a child, just temper tantrum and throw other word injects into that sentence that completely just re-altered the trajectory of where that conversation is going to go. You know, with the tongue, we can speak life and we can speak death. We can speak positive, we can speak negative. And again, the easy road is to always complain. And misery loves company, we know that. So if you complain enough, one, you're going to be tiled as a complainer. So you might want to change circles, and now you go around a bunch of other people who like to complain too, and you guys just have your merry fits together, and you feed off of it, you fuel off of it. And then you try and get that group to expand and to grow. So now you have a whole station or a whole department of nothing but complainers, and the ones of logic that, you know, bite their tongues, you want to consider them weak for not having an opinion or a point of view. But really, the ones that bite their tongues are the ones that look back and say, I'm not going to touch that clickbait. I'm not going to entertain you with a logical response, because it's clear that your agenda is backed by hidden motives of just being destructive. So again, that's what we're going to kind of read about here biblically in James. Overtaming the tongue. Excuse me, I'm still drinking my liquid gold. Gotta love my coffee. So James chapter 3, verse 1. Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. What a powerful opening scripture right there. Not many of you should become teachers. And when the good book here says teachers, it doesn't specify educational teachers. It doesn't specify, you know, training captains, training this. It doesn't specify what type of teacher. But if you are, it encompasses it by, if you are that person who has been put in a position to show others or to explain to others how to do things from the knowledge you have learned, that's a teacher. So you senior men that are over rookies or probies, you're a teacher. If you're a father, you're a teacher. Even if you're a spouse, you're a teacher. So regardless of the fact, in some way, some shape, some form, we are teachers. But if you seek out to be in that position, so that's a natural. Let me sidetrack and backtrack a little bit. Some of us, or all of us, are naturally teachers and leaders to some point or extent. But if we want to promote into a position or seek out a position that is based solely on those skill sets of regurgitating knowledge and skill sets in one way, shape, or form, or even on a scriptural content here of being a pastor, you're going to be judged more. So if you are seeking out those positions, hopefully you're doing that with the best and clearest of intentions of, look, I know that I have got great people skills. I'm not talking about myself. This is just in general. But I've got great people skills. I know how to approach people. I know how to take a subject matter and break it down to where my four-year-old can understand it. Can I? And at the same time, are you able to get a hold of those guys who might be older than you, or who might have more time in service and feel like, well, what does this young man have to show me? He has not been on the job near as long as I have. What can I learn from him? Are you able to teach those kind of people? Are you able to break through and make a connection with those kind of people and still get that subject taught? But he warns us. James warns us in this, though. Know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. And again, another thing that just comes right to mind. Okay, you have great points in your head. You sit there and you think, okay, this is great content. I'm going to send it out there on social media. I got a platform. I'm going to send this out there on social media. There's going to be, that will resonate with a lot of people. And it will get circled around. But at the same time, who is delivering that message? Who is delivering that content? What credentials do they have? Are they brand new and just have great insight? Okay, well, let's see what this person can do, because there's a lot of people that can talk about the job. There's a lot of people that can regurgitate and kind of personalize in their own way a similar message that we've all seen before, but can they live that? It's a rhetorical question. I'm not calling anyone out, but can they actually live that? Do their actions back up the content they're projecting? So verse 2, we all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. Again, we're not all perfect, guys. There's only one perfect person that ever lived and existed, and that was Jesus Christ. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Like the wise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. That's just, it doesn't get any more simpler than that, does it, though? You look at this, look at this ship analogy we just heard about there in verse 4. It is large and driven by strong winds, but it's a small, small rudder that legitimately makes it go. It guides it. It can fight against those strong winds and currents, and it will stay on path. It's just backing up how powerful such a small part of the human body is, and that's the tongue. We look down here at the notes. It goes over verses 3, 1, 2. We are all guilty of offending others by either our words or actions. When we have wrongfully offended someone, we need to ask forgiveness and make restitution for the wrongs we have committed. Sometimes a quiet change of behavior can be the most effective way to make restitution for our previous failures. By treating others with respect, we can slowly build the trust we have destroyed and give back some of what we have taken. As we follow God's plan and obey His word, we can learn to avoid offending others and instead encourage them with our words and deeds. I mean, we don't have enough of that, I don't think. Or maybe they get overlooked or whatever the case is. But and you got to build people up. I know some people might mistake that as gassing someone up or hyping someone up or, you know, kiss and tail, or whatever you want to call it. But man, have you ever just had like an off day or whatnot, and when your crew members came up to you or your wife, or if you're a female listening, your husband, and they just give you a compliment? Like, hey, man, you're looking good today. You know, I see, I know you've been doing the work, but hey, man, you're looking good. You can see the change. It does something to you. If that's your first time to ever receive a compliment, sure, it might be weird. It might be awkward. Like, okay, sure, yeah, thanks. But what about the, hey, man, you did an awesome job. Like, you got out there. You are a company officer. You didn't know what you didn't know until you found out you didn't know it. But you're humble enough to be like, hey, man, I want to learn more on that. And that company officer, maybe that 2-year guy in the house, he's been just all over that. You came back from a class, teaching other people about it, right? His crew about it. And the company officer comes out there and he's like, man, you know what? I really don't know much about that. And I'd like to get better at that. Would you mind just teaching and showing me that? That using those words to make an impact got way much more respect for company officer who's able to humble themselves and be like, look, I don't know what I don't know, but you know it. I don't care where the source is coming from, but you know how to do, let's just use body drags, victim drags. I've not seen that way before. Why do you do it that way? Okay, well, it's backed by the data. We want to keep the head low, blah, blah, blah. And this is the best way for body joint lock manipulation, so that way it's easier on us. It's less friction on them when we turn them sideways. And the guy just starts breaking it down for him. He's like, wow, I never knew that. I just did not know that. Let's practice that. We've got to build each other up, guys. We all got in this profession because we want to do cool stuff. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing cooler than being a fireman. But it all goes back to you saving those guys, the citizens, in their moments of distress. Whether they put themselves there or not, it's the emergency that we got toned out to. We have an obligation to mitigate that. And we got to know how to mitigate that. And so we have to build each other up as we all go through the fire service together. And you just, again, the biblical teachings and the fire service, in my personal opinion, go hand in hand. So, going back to what we just read there, though, as we follow God's plan and obey His word, we can learn to avoid offending others and instead encourage them with our words and deeds. Words and deeds. We can say it, but we also have to act it out. You know, if someone screws up in training, don't belittle them. Like, I cannot believe you ain't going to be on my crew, whatever the case is. Like, look, man, clearly you don't know how to do this, but let's work on that. Let's break it down step by step. And I'm not going to get into the debate rabbit chase of, okay, well, how long do you have to do that before someone's not fit? Because I do agree that this job legitimately is not meant for everybody, not in a bravado manner, but you can't be weak. You just can't be weak. The best way I can describe that right now, and be in the fire service. But if they got the hunger, they got the desire, they're just lacking the skill sets, we've got to build them up. We've got to encourage them. So let's see, where am I at now? All right, here we go. Going back to verse 5. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. So if you're like me, you read that. The title of this chapter is called Taming the Tongue. But here in verse 8, we are told, but no human being can tame the tongue. So it's a practice. You can't have practice without discipline. See how all this just comes together in past episodes, and the big word discipline keeps roaming around and showing its face. You've got to be disciplined. You got to make that conscious decision to choose your words wisely. Are we going to speak positively, or are we going to speak negatively? Are we going to have that discipline? If the circle we're in, the group we're in, wherever it's at, if they start on a negative path, are we going to have the discipline to hold our tongue or even just completely remove ourselves from the situation? Or are we going to give in? And are we going to sit there and just partake in it? You know, again, it's going back to how it says with the whole body there. You know, a world of evil among parts of the body, it corrupts the whole body. It's funny how just your tongue can do that. Because you can have the outward appearance of whatever. You can look like a great god, or you can put on your bunker gear and just look like the saltiest dude in the world. But if all you do is speak negative stuff, you don't know how to control your emotions, you don't know how to formulate your words, it corrupts the body. You can look the part all day long, but if you cannot say life into just any kind of scenario, it's going to leave that negative image. Like, look, I don't care what that dude looks like. I don't want to be around him. He never speaks positively. Of course, on the hindsight, yes, you can build people up, but you got to be able to back up what you're talking about. Going back to what we just learned down here, we must encourage them with our words and deeds. Verse 9. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth we praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. And again, that's the toe stepping on my end too, and probably some of y'all as well. Two sentences later, we can be sitting there and talking about how great God is and what God's done in our lives and just give him all the praise in the world and say this, the conversation's going on during a car trip. And then all of a sudden, some person cuts us off and decides to slam on the brakes for whatever reason, and we cuss. It's counterintuitive. So we got to work on that. We've got to learn to compose ourselves and become more disciplined to speak life and speak positivity and not be so quick to, with the same mouth, just ruin and destroy. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. It's just reiterating the fact that you can't be both. Now, again, we're not all perfect, but if we have a slip of the lip and a foul word comes out of our mouth, do we apologize for it? Do we do our best to try and, you know, fight those fleshful urges after the fact? You know, we got to think about these things. Second part of chapter 3 is called Two Kinds of Wisdom. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. We'll reread that. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Pause. You got to think about it. This was pre-social media, pre-lines of communication. This was all humans living in the moment. Okay, they didn't have phones, they didn't have computers, they couldn't post content. Jesus wasn't out there taking selfies, look at me breaking bread, turning 3 loaves into 5,000. You know, he was not capturing that to show, look at me. It was in the moment. And so I think about that now when it says, let them show it by their good life. It's how they live every day. And if you're in a community, again, we're in the fire, so within your department, do people know who you are just by the good life you live? Or do they know who you are by the negative words you constantly speak, by whatever it is you post of controversy that you just can't help yourself on to get an arousal or whatever it is, or you're frustrated at a policy or whatever the case is, and you try and bring it to light, but you just bomb on the delivery of it. You know what? Let the people show who they are by the life they live. And again, if you're, I sit there and I watch some of these reels too as I'm scrolling through social media of giving to the poor. They intentionally know that they're going to record going up to a homeless person and give them $500 to see what they do with it. That to me goes back to the selfish ambition in your hearts. Do not boast about it. If you're going to do that, just do that. That's between you, that person, and God. You know, and it's not a look at me thing. So why are you trying to do that? Are you trying to gain more likes? Are you trying to gain a huge following? And maybe you can start slipping in some sponsorship stuff. So now you're getting paid for it. So now you're actually making money. Now you're obligated to continue to do those things to make more money. Do you see the rabbit hole here? But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder in every evil practice. When you're envious of someone, or you got selfish ambitions, it's all for me. I'm not trying to put all this work in to share for others or to be an example of what a nobody can do in my life outside of recorded, posted content. Okay, this is what it's talking about here. And this goes back to having humility. Okay, have I been guilty of time being envious of people? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's safe to say we all have. Man, this, look at what all this person has done with their career. Look at all the accomplishments. Look at all the hard challenges they've overcome. Look at the programs they self-sought out and just killed, and they continue to do that. Man, that's, if they can do it, I can do it. Yes, but that's a path that God's got them on. And your path may parallel at points with that person. But again, with that selfish ambition, are you now wanting to pursue those things because that person you envied is doing it? And so just because they did it, I want to do it? Or were you like, man, you know, after talking with this person, I know all the adversity and things that they've come through and have conquered. That's some life lessons that I can use, that I can better myself. And then maybe one day, just maybe one day, there'll be another person like me that I would be able to help share. Again, keep in mind the concept of Jesus left the 99 for the one. The 99 were already following him, but he was not pandering to the 99. He ran like crazy to that one lost person. So if you're able to just change one life, just one life with your actions and your positivity and the taming of your tongue, that's not selfish ambition. That's fulfilling God's will. And that's worth it all. So just keep it simple. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving. It's considerate, and a big hard-to-swallow pill here for a lot of people, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. It's verse 18, it's the last verse of chapter 3. But listen to that. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. Those are the guys that when there's debates or the quarrels, they step up with a tamed tongue and composed emotions and try and bring logic to both sides. But if they find out they're overwhelmed and there's no peace to be had there, they have enough to simply say something like, it's clear you guys are both heated and passionate about the differences of opinions here. This is going to have to be one of those moments to agree to disagree and maybe just consider humbling yourselves and looking at the other angle. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it or like it, but just respect it and understand where that other person is coming from. So at least you at least have a better understanding. And just because y'all went to war over one topic does not mean that you guys don't have 50 other topics, that you guys actually have a lot of common ground and the same insight on. So don't let this one molehill turn into a vast mountain that will avalanche down on both of you. The tongue is a difficult thing to control, but what it does is extremely important. Like rudders that steer ships or bits that direct horses, our tongues do much to control and shape our lives. Our speech may have been instrumental in destroying our relationships, causing a painful downward spiral in our lives. If this is the case, we need to yield our tongues to God's control. Again, I'm guilty of that too. Now, just on a little personal note, if you're married long enough, you're going to have your disagreements. Well, in that moment of disagreeing, are you more worried about being right? And so you'll say whatever to prove you're right. Now all of a sudden your spouse is hurt. And do you have the humility to be like, look, I'm sorry. I didn't mean for it to come out that way. I'm sorry I was being childish. Or do you just leave on that note and you don't follow up if you saw that there is true damage done to make amends with it? Yeah, that's the person you made a covenant vow to cherish and respect, to love and honor. And there's been times where I haven't lived up to that in those moments of, you know, intense disagreements on subjects and put the foot down. Well, how did that really work out? And then when you realize that, you have to make right. You have to go back. You have to apologize. So maybe one day we can look at this a little better, or maybe my approach was not the right and I'm very sorry for that. I will work on that. But are those empty words, or are you going to truly work on that? You know, going back to yielding our tongues to God's control. I do. I pray every morning when I wake up. One, I give thanks that I'm awake, that I'm able to move around. But then I also ask God to get me out of the way, to help me fight my fleshful temptations or my fleshful outbursts, and that He can truly guide me throughout the day. And then I try and look for Him in everything. Try and look for the positivity. Try and be that encouraging person. You know, and several years ago, I used to be a short-tempered hothead, and that wasn't always the case. I'd fly off the handles, but that didn't get me anywhere. If anything, it just got me more stressed and more anxiety. But as you learn and as you mature and as you, you know, surrender more and more to God's will and just obey the word here, you will see that change, and it will continue to change. Even when we are unable to control our destructive words, God can still tame our tongues. As He transforms us from the inside out, the words we speak will soon begin to reflect the changes. God will then be able to use our words to heal our relationships and encourage others. And that's not an easy thing for a lot of people to do, to try and make wrong with somebody. And a lot of that just goes back to pride and ego. You know, it's being submissive. If you did wrong, you did wrong. Just man up to it. And even if that person that you offended or you wronged, and you go to them and you apologize, and if they don't want to take the high road, and yeah, you should come and apologize and just banter and belittle you, just take it on the chin. Don't revert back to, again, setting that forest on fire with your spark of a tongue. Just leave it alone. That they don't know how to process something like that yet. They're all still in a learning process about themselves too. And they find something new about how they're going to react to a situation. That's where we got to have more patience. You have the patience that Christ had. Well, that was chapter 3, guys. Like I said, there's a lot in there that it was a gut punch, a good solemn reminder of what to be and how to live and how much power that small little tongue has. And to do our best to ask God to control that. And if you're a person that's done a lot of damage over a long period of time because you just never chose to formulate and articulate your words wisely, or you're just a destructive person by constant white lies and just negativity. You know, that over a long period of time, there's going to be people that pick up on that, that stay in your circle, whether through work or through life. And you got to think about how long it took for that to occur. It's going to take a little bit of time to see the change when you decide to change. And hey, I was wrong. My bad. They might look at you a little crazy, like, what's wrong with you? What's gotten into you? Just stay the course. Correct your wrongs. And then you will become a testimony of, hey, God can change that person. You know, and then you'll actually gain more respect from that instead of just demeaning it with negativity. Well, guys, that's all I got on James chapter 3. It's, again, I just love this James book. It's so direct and to the point. And it's what I appreciate about it. I hope y'all have a safe New Year's Eve. I really hope and pray that you think twice about getting behind the wheel. In all sincerity, guys, I know the brothers that are on the job right now tonight, I just pray that God be with you, that you don't have to see horrible wrecks that end in fatalities. And if you go out with your crew or your shift or friends, guys, we got Uber, we got cabs out there. Please do the wise thing. Don't be that hypocritical fireman that gets angry and cusses at scenes where drunk people kill people and then become that drunk driver yourself, or be that same exact person that the other one did behind the wheel that caused such a change for some family because they killed someone. It's near and dear to me. I used to be that guy when I was younger, and I thank God every day that he spared me from having to be that person. But I've learned from it, and I choose not to even put myself in that situation. So please, please, I urge you to just think with a clear conscience tonight as you bring in the new year in whichever way you see fit. Just know I love you guys, and we'll see you next year.